Jarrell, how you doing?
I'm good, I'm good. You?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing during quarantine?
It's a loaded question. you know, all things that said, well, I'm good right now, you know.
The vino was flowing, you know, I feel good.
That's good. Big fan of the new album. I love listening to it. I gave it a few plays since it released in February.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I said, I love the new album. I've given it a few plays since February.
Oh, hell yeah. Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Because I feel as though your music has a message, whereas nowadays, the mainstream music that you hear on the radio, nothing has a message in it anymore.
I mean, I don't know if there's been much change over the years. You know, mainstream radio is just popular music, you know? Not that it doesn't have a message, because I think some people are just in different places in their life, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think the way that I just try to approach music is, it's just more authentic. I just try to deliver something that I'm talking to myself and I'm talking to y'all, basically, you know? Yeah.
So tell me, how long have you been working on this new album, Keep Everything Yourself?
Probably over like the last year and a half is when I really started to get serious. Not serious about it, but when it really started to click for me. You know, like the ideas, the direction I wanted to go, the name, all of that. So probably about a year and a half.
And what made you choose that title?
I think that a lot of times when you hear the name, it sounds very selfish, like keep everything yourself, like I'm saying, you know, don't give nothing to anybody. But really what it's about is just doing the introspective and self-reflective work so you can figure out why you are who you are, why you think the things you think, you know, why your behavior patterns, you know, so you can, you know, be identify that, because some of that shit needs to change. I don't know, can I cuss? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're fine. Go ahead.
All right, because some of that needs to change, and some of it you can improve on, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just important to work on yourself before you give anything to the world, you know? And that's kind of like what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me, what was it like growing up in Columbus, Ohio?
I think it's like most inner city, inner city cities, you know, like most major metropolitan cities, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I mean, my personal experience, like, you know, I grew up in the inner city, so the things that seem normal to me may not have been to the outside world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know how to really answer that question. Because it was just normal to me, you know. It was, a little, there's definitely violence and shit, but for me, that wasn't my story per se, because I think a lot of times, like, your peer group really identifies, like, what kind of, like, your interest in what you find yourself into, you know. So for me, you know, my peers were, for the most part, straight edge, clean slate, and that's how I was, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. At what age did you start rapping?
Oh, we started early. It was like grade school early.
Grade school, wow.
Yeah. But it wasn't good. You know? Like, it was more so like, you know, throwing words together and trying to rhyme, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good. It took a while for that to become something that I was proud of.
Mm-hmm. I know you're from Ohio, so were Bone Thugs and Harmony a big influence?
I mean, they were definitely something to identify with, you know, because there's not many artists, musicians from Columbus per se, who make it to a national stage or even an international stage, you know. So growing up, it was like, you know, Bone was definitely, you know, like somebody you could look at and say, all right, this is possible. You know what I'm saying? And Busy, he was from the city. So, like, you know, he definitely would see us rapping around, rapping and shit. And he would, you know, I remember one time I ran into him and he was like, you still rapping, Young Blood? I was like, yeah. He was like, you know, keep doing that shit, you know? So it's like, it was always great, a good, it felt good to know that somebody from the city, from our state, was respected on a large scale.
Mm-hmm. And those are legends, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They changed the course of a lot of this music, you know, like the melody and rap. I mean, I know people have done it before them, but they really put it on the radar like nobody else did.
Mm-hmm. So you would say that they were the ones to put Ohio on the map?
I wouldn't say that. You know, there's a lot of, like, Gap Band, for example, they're from Ohio.
Yeah, that's right. Charlie Wilson.
Roger Troutman, you know, so, I mean, if you're talking about rap music.
Yeah, for hip-hop.
I mean, there's an argument to make there, yeah.
Would you get them on a track as a feature?
Like in 2020?
Yeah.
I don't know if our styles mesh. If it makes sense, yeah, I'm down. you know, like, it's weird because a lot of, I'm very aware of, you know, of, like, myself and the music I make. So, like, there's people that I'm a fan of that I don't think we would ever sound good making music together, but I let her sound, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Who are some artists that you would think would sound good on a track together with you?
I'm gonna go producer more than I will go like feature, just because the feature part, that's the hard.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of people.
I can throw the usual suspects out. You know what I'm saying? I can say Drake. I can say Jay-Z. I can say. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard for me to say that.
Yeah.
Producer wise, I definitely would love to work with Knowledge. You know, just growing up as a big fan of Timbaland, I would love that. I don't know, it's a lot of guys out there. It's just a lot of great artists, you know.
And speaking of production, this album was production heavy and every beat is different and it's listenable because a lot of the beats today, they all sound the same. So when I listen to this album, your album, and I'm a big critic of hip-hop. I love the lyrics and I love the production side of things. I feel as though the game has gotten real sloppy when it comes to that. So when I listen to your album, I hear great storytelling and great production. Your album's a 10 out of 10 for me.
Oh, hey, I appreciate that.
It's a 10 out of 10. Not, and you can just tell that you put a lot of work into having a great production sound for this album.
Yeah. I mean, and I wouldn't... I try not to put down or talk down like other elements of like rap and hip hop,
mm-hmm.
To like boost what I'm doing, just because like I'm a fan of artists, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like honestly, like I listen to everything. I listen to, you know, things that you might deem unintelligent are, you know, all the way to the electronica. You know what I'm saying?
But what matters is that you do it, because there's a lot of artists out here that just do things to follow a wave that's mainstream, and they just do everything for the likes on Instagram and the streaming numbers, where people have forgotten how to be an artist, and that's the main thing that you represent, is being an artist and having your own sound.
I don't know if they forgot. I think the disconnect or the difference is in 2020, the cost of entry to do music is low.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like all you need is a laptop and a computer, and you can make music.
Mm-hmm. And auto-tune.
Yeah, I mean, but back in the day, if you were serious about the art form, you had to have the means to go to a studio and you actually had to care. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, back then, it was different. You know, now, anybody can do it. So, I think that's the disconnect. It's not that people don't... They're not musicians out there. Like, there's musicians, the people who study music. Like, you know what I mean? There's people who care about the art form.
The difference is that all you need is a laptop and a computer, and you can make music.
Yeah. So who were some of the producers on this album that you worked with?
Mainly it was a producer named Norrell. He's from New York. He did 8 of the 12 songs on the album.
Okay.
Like me and him, but it was ironically, I was at a party. I live in LA now, so I was at a party, and this guy walked up to me. He was like, "Yo, I fuck with your music. There's this producer. He's my good friend. I think y'all should connect."
Mm-hmm.
So he put us on email, and then you know I responded. And at that time, the most his claim to fame was a song by ASAP that he produced called Hella Hoes.
Okay, I'm familiar with that.
So he produced that song, and so that was the connection. That's how I knew who he was. Like, oh shit, yeah, I'm familiar. And so then we just started building on email, went to text, and then like it was just a good collaborative relationship.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you guys work together in the studio, or everything was through email?
Everything was through email.
Everything was through email.
Yeah. So a lot of it was. Like him just sending me, it started off as me sending him like a playlist of like references of like what the direction that I wanted to go in. And then that turned into him, you know, just building off of that.
Mm-hmm.
He would send me, you know, tracks via email. I would respond, telling, you know, yay, nay, whatever, you know. And this was a 2-year process. But a year and a half into it is when I really started to click for me, you know?
Yeah. And I love the intro on this. It's a really strong start off to the album, and it really sets the tone. I feel as though people need to take intros a lot more seriously nowadays because that sets off the album. You started off the album with a bang.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to your point. I think it's important to give people's attention.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I think a lot of albums, where they fall short at is their arrangement. Like, not the arrangement of the song, but how they arrange the track list order.
Because
mm-hmm. A lot of albums will be better if they put some songs in different positions before others or after others, you know? So, you know, that's one area where I kind of pride myself in is being able to really curate an album and, like, know what song should go where.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is your favorite track off this album?
Honestly, I can't say I have one because it changes, like it fluctuates depending on my mood, like depending on how I feel at the time, you know?
Yeah, it'll change. And it's a great album, and there's a lot of different moods on here too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
a lot of different moods.
Like one day, you know, it's bankroll, you know, another day it's a pair of strings, another day it's the same team, it's the intro, you know, so it's like
head and shoulders too.
Yeah, it's like having 12 kids and like love them equally but for different reasons.
Oh man, I love same team as well. And I hear in the song the sample of Eazy-E from Easy Does It, I believe. Of the little girl in the beginning of Easy Does It.
I don't know. We definitely went in and tried to replace it as we could.
Yeah, that was fire though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the reference is there. You know what I'm saying? That's definitely the reference. For sure.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I enjoy when I listen to your music is I feel as though you do pay homage to the prior artists.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I learned that from, you know, the people that came before me. Like, I think a lot of, I mean, the whole origins of hip-hop is about, like, taking something and recreating something. You know what I'm saying? Something else. So it's like, that's really the origins of it. So I think that's still important to carry that on. That's why, like, I'm not offended or I don't care about, like, the idea of somebody, like, using something you said and flipping it, you know, in some capacity.
Yeah. Now, for all my listeners who are tuned in right now that haven't checked out the album yet, what are some of the main messages that you talk about in this album that you get across?
I mean, it's like a mission. Like, it's a self-reflective album. It's an introspective album. Asking tough questions. You know, there's some shit talking. I don't think it's just a common, like, one sentence to say, yo, pull this from the album. But if I had to identify something, it would just be, like, self-reflective, introspective thought. And doing self-work, you know, and, like, asking tough questions.
And another thing that I want to bring up is that you do mention police brutality on this album.
Mm-hmm.
And receiving harassment from police officers. Do you feel as though that there's other artists who are making a strong point in their music about police brutality besides you?
I mean, I'm sure there are. I don't know one artist who doesn't address harassment from police.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'd be hard-pressed to find one rapper that don't. I'm sure that there are some out there, but at least the ones that are in my rotation.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know if there's many who don't identify, acknowledge, I should say, or that have experience of running with the police that, you know, was unfavorable.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because I tend to bring up to my guests sometimes, with everything going on in society and then who we have in the White House now. And I just feel as though we need a few more rappers out there, like what Public Enemy did back in the day. And they talk about societal issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of artists on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Public Enemy is one example during that time because they were so, for lack of a better term, they were more left-wing, you know, and they were far left. But there's a lot of moderate rappers who touch on that. That just may not be, like, their main focus when they rap.
Yeah, but this album was definitely something I gave a listen to a few times, especially nowadays. I always say that I'm a hip-hop critic. This was something I listened to multiple times. And I want to get into the album cover. Who shot the album cover?
My homie, his name is R. So his name is R. Bernard. He actually did the album cover for my last album as well. Never Had Me Playing. Me and him, we go back many years. He's from Atlanta, but he lives out in LA now. And we just, you know, we just got a good working relationship.
That's great. Yeah, I've been listening to you for years, and what really put me on was when LeBron posted the video for Really Got It. I'm sure you've heard this hundreds and billions of times. But that's when I really started tuning in to you. I think it was 2016 because you ended up performing for the finals that year. And I'll get into that later. And that was just an insane performance too. But Really Got It was a banger that year.
Yeah. It was a good year. Like it was, so before that I was in a group.
Fly Union. Fly Union. Yep.
In 2014 is when the group, like, dismembered, and then I went solo. Was started my solo career. So, like, 2016 when I released the album, it just really became, like, a theme song for the Cavs playoff run.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, as they went deeper into the playoffs, the songs got bigger and bigger and bigger, to the point where I was able to do a Beats campaign.
And what was that like, the Beats
campaign? And, like, it kind of just became the soundtrack for the championship run. Mm-hmm. And so, like, a lot of people in Cleveland, Ohio, even, like, sports fans in general, are people who are music fans, shit, for that matter, it's synonymous with that whole moment.
Mm-hmm. And what were the Beats and 2K campaigns like?
What were the Beats like?
Yeah, the Beats and 2K campaigns like?
It's like the, Well, we did Really Got It was a song featured on the ad, on the game.
Oh, okay. Now I know what you mean. I thought you meant you went and did an actual campaign. Okay.
Yeah. But like, yeah, it was more like an activation. Like, the music was licensed for that, you know what I'm saying? But like, Nike, you know, there was modeling things, and then with Beats by Dre, we actually did the whole, really got a visual.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you think that that was the song that was going to really give you attention?
I knew it would, I knew it was a song that would, it was a good reintroduction to Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people at the time, if they knew me from my previous work, this would be a good way to say, yo, you know, I'm still alive, I'm still here, I'm doing music now, but I'm doing it under Jerome, you know?
Mm-hmm. And when we were with Fly Union, what was it like touring with TDE?
Oh, it was cool. It was, we had fun. We kicked it. Like, it was really, it wasn't like pressure. There wasn't like egos. It was just like, you know, at that stage in his career, like, he was still, him as in Kendrick, he was still, it was before his major label release.
Yeah.
So the energy was just different, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, people were accessible, you know what I mean? Like, we would play 2K, you know what I'm saying? They'd come to the locker room, not the locker room, but the dressing room, and like listen to beats and shit, you know what I mean? So it was very like, just laid back, chill, you know, you do your job, you go to the next city.
Mm. Now, did Kendrick Lamar ever tell you what he liked about your style?
I mean, we never really talked music. It was more so just, it was never that. At the time, like, his manager, Dave Free, was a Fly Union fan. He was a fan of the sound, and so, I met Kendrick when I was in, when he came to Michigan. East Lansing, mm-hmm. Michigan State to do a show, and that's when we met then. So at that time, it was more so like a respecting, like, yo, my homie respects you, so let me see what you're about, and that was how it started, you know what I'm saying? So like, oh, okay, y'all actually got some shit, you know, and then it turned into us going on tour, you know?
Yeah. Do you see you two collabing together in the future?
Me and Kendrick?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, me and Kendrick?
Yeah, you and Kendrick.
I mean, shit, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like that kind of stuff, like, is just one of those, it's not necessarily like a priority or a goal of mine, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one of those, like, Kendrick ain't doing nothing he don't want to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so if it happens, yes, I'd be honored. But honestly, I never even thought about it, so you just asking.
And I want to get into your relationship with LeBron. How long have you known him for?
What was that?
I want to get into your relationship with LeBron. How long have you known him for?
I've known LeBron probably since 08-09.
08-09. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how did you guys meet?
Ohio. You know, like Brian is a student of music. Like, he loves music. He probably knows songs that I've forgot. And so, like, at the time, one of his good friends took a liking to my music, and he wanted to start managing us. So, you know, that turned into, of course, him introducing us to his friends.
Yeah.
Which happened to be LeBron. And then, you know, from there, it's just been a relationship, mutual respect. You know, I was always a fan of LeBron, you know, and he, you know, took a liking to the sound.
You mentioned on the album, too, that he drove 4 hours to see you perform. Where were you performing at when he drove 4 hours?
So, back to the thing about TDE. So, what happened is we had a show on the Good Kid, Mad City tour. We had a show in D.C. Mm-hmm. And so, like, Bron, all the Horsemen, which is Rich, Mav, and Ramos, and even Tristan Thompson, like, it was a couple guys in the cast, like, you know, they it was like, fuck it, we're going to drive down.
Yeah.
So they hopped in, they all hopped in their Porsches. And normally it's a 5.5-6 hour drive, but they made it in 4. And so that was the time that Bron met Kendrick, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we had a show, we had a relationship, they were there, and that's how that shit happened.
Mm-hmm. Has he said anything to you about the new album?
We had a chat.
Mm-hmm.
We had a chat.
How would you say that you've grown as an artist since your first project as a solo artist?
I think I just grew as a human, you know what I'm saying, more than anything, mm-hmm. more as an adult. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a natural thing I shouldn't say it will happen, but it should happen, you know. I think on this album, I just challenged myself a little more, experimenting with different flows. I think I'm naturally, you know, an authentic and vulnerable artist. And so with this album, I think it wasn't like I said, yo, I need to do this.
Yes.
It just comes natural to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last project you dropped was in 2016, and you just dropped your second project in 2020. Now, mm-hmm. what was the reason for the long wait? Was it that you just wanted people to consume the first project before you rushed and dropped another one? Because in this day in music, I mean, you always got to be dropping something quickly.
I mean, I think that's a... I think you have your artists who drop, you know, more regularly than others. Then you have artists who take a little more time. It's not always the case, but most times the people who take a little more time are the albums that have more staying power.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not like, it's not like a thing where I'm like, yo, you know, I'm taking my time, but I also don't want to create if it's not authentic to me. So I don't just put songs out just because I got them, you know? So for me, it was more about just finding my voice and deciding if this is even makes sense for me still, you know what I'm saying? Like, do I still want to rap? You know what I mean? Like, does what I have to say have power? Does it have meaning? You know what I'm saying? Like, like, you know, anybody can just go into the studio and rap, you know?
Yeah, you're right about that.
You know, like I said, like I be talking to myself and I be rapping to y'all. I'm not joking.
And as you mentioned before, you're in a group, Fly Union. What would you say were the positives and negatives of being a part of a group?
I think in any collaborative setting, it's going to be compromise. I think it teaches you how to work with others, you know what I'm saying? Like, it teaches you how to put your ego aside. If it's going to work, if it's going to be successful, you know what I mean? I think the negatives is just that... I don't know if I can say if it's a negative, it just changes how you move or how you go about settling things, you know? Because in a different scenario, you're going to do whatever the fuck you want to do.
Yeah.
But when you're in a group, or like if you're in a relationship, or if you're in a household with multiple people, you have to consider how my actions affect other people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's a negative thing. It's just a reality.
Yeah. And I know I've heard you in interviews, you compared it to being in a group project, almost. Like for school.
Yeah, exactly.
And I agree with that, because sometimes not everyone does their part of the job, and you have to do it for them.
Yeah, I mean, that happens too, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not easy. Anybody that's been in a group, or a collaborative setting, like it's not easy, but I don't think it's supposed to be, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that also is what challenges you and it helps you to be able to work with others in different situations, because you can't do all of this by yourself. Like, there's nobody who's successful that's done it on their own.
No. And do you think this is the reason why we don't see hip-hop groups as much anymore? Like we did back in the day, we used to saw Dipset, G-Unit, we saw all these hip-hop groups back in the day, and now it's kind of just all solo artists.
I think the reason for that is because of the money.
Everyone wants to get their own, you know what I mean? Their own money.
Yeah, like, it's if you're in a group or a duo, anything you make, you got to cut it in half, or you got to cut it in thirds, or you got to cut it in fours. So it's not very profitable to be in a group. It's just not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard enough for solo artists to make it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely say that. And I also want to get into a little sports talk because you are from Ohio. So did you grow up a Cleveland Cavaliers fan?
Nah. So I'm from Columbus. And so for me, it was just, when you're in Columbus, it's you're a Buckeye. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, you know, even if, like, some people have other sports teams that they identify with or that they have followed throughout their life, but at the very least, you're an Ohio State fan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, there's no major basketball team, there's no major football team, no major league baseball team. And so it's all Ohio State, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would catch the Cavs when I caught them. I would catch the Bengals when I caught them. I would catch the Browns when I caught them. I would catch the, you know, the Indians when I caught them. But I wasn't following them,
yeah. You know. And what year did you move to L.A.? Because you said you're in Los Angeles now.
Yeah, I moved to L.A. in 2014.
Mm-hmm. What was that transition like?
It was seamless. You know, it was more so like I would come out to L.A. to visit, so it wasn't new to me. So assimilating to the city, I think it came more, a little more easier, because I didn't just move, just up and leave and come to LA, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was actually one time, for example, where I came to LA and I stayed for 3 months. And at that time, that was when it was like, all right, okay, this is something that I could do, or this is something, or is this a place that I want to be, you know?
Mm-hmm. And LeBron's in LA now, too, so what was that like? You guys both were in Cleveland. Well, you were in Columbus, but he was in Cleveland, both Ohio, and all of a sudden you're both in LA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I moved to LA 2014, so this was before
the finals, the 2016 championship.
But even then, what, it was 2018 when they played against
Golden State.
Yeah, Golden State. Was that 2018? Like 2017. 2017, 2018.
Yeah.
That said, like, I mean, even before he actually moved to L.A., you know, people come to L.A. in the summertime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So even though, you know, he hadn't officially moved here, he was out here, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it was, for me, I was able to kind of beat the curve, in a sense, because a lot of people, Mr. King, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of people, you know, when moves are made, other people make moves.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, like, it's cool because I have a lot of friends and a lot of people from Ohio who are in Los Angeles, you know? So in so many ways, it's like you're away from home, but you're not.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Kobe Bryant on the album, and I do want to ask you this. Was this before he passed away?
Yeah, it was.
And what was that?
I finished recording the album on October 4th of 2019.
Okay.
And so, well, technically it was October 3rd. So what happened is I finished the album, and I was still waiting on the hook for Ride and Death.
Mm-hmm.
Track four on the album. And so
yep, that's the fourth one.
And so, like, the guy who's singing the hook, his name is Kane. I was looking at him to send me a hook back, and I said, you know, fuck it. Let me just write it. I'm going to put a reference to it, how I wanted to say it, and I'm going to send it to you. And so the verses about Kobe was already done. Like, that line was already in the song, October 3rd. Then I wrote the hook, and the hook is like, ride death, empty your cup to it ain't nothing left. I send it to King so he can lay it down. And that was literally the last thing I had to make on the album. And then the next day, on October 4th, is when I lost a parent.
Oh, my condolences.
It was like, when you listen to that song, it makes it even more eerie because I make that comment about Kobe. The hook is about emptying your cup and doing living to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
And then you lose a parent the next day. So then it's like, when you listen to it now, it's like, damn, like it's a very eerie situation, you know?
Mm. It's just strange how that would happen, especially looking back on that. But you're actually in L.A., so what was that day like? Because I'm in New York, so I could only imagine how horrible it was. But what was it like from your perspective in L.A. that day?
I mean, it was eerie because I remember I was actually out late, and so I was coming home early in the morning, and it was very foggy that morning. It was very foggy. You could barely see, you know, 6-10 feet ahead of you.
Yeah.
And so when I got home, I'm like, damn, like, it's foggy this morning. And so it was about noon, and I'm talking to my homies via text, and they're like, yo, this Kobe news got to be fake. And I didn't know what they were talking about at the time. And I'm like, what you mean? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I kind of ignored it. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, forgive me, but I'm thinking, did he do something illegal? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Or did he do something like, you know, cheat on his wife or something? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what they were talking about. Yeah. You know?
I didn't think he would die.
That can't be.
That's the thing. I didn't think he'd ever die.
Yeah. And it's like, and so then I turned on the news after that, and it was like, yo, they're reporting, you know, XYZ, and I'm like, yo, nah. And it's not like, I don't think that anybody is above or beyond death. It's weird, it's just some figures in our life or in our imagination that we see, and we don't see him going out like that, you know what I mean? Like, I just, in my mind, I just envision him growing old, like being an ambassador for the NBA, the game of basketball. Like, I really respected his mind, you know, like, I could see, you know, where he was going in life, you know, and so, like, in my mind, I just always thought that he would just grow old with us, you know?
Yeah, and it really affected the world for weeks, and I think we're still impacted by it, forever will be, just because of the impact he had. I look at Mamba mentality, he was more than a basketball player, he was culture.
Yeah, no, definitely. He was very iconic. He was an icon.
Yeah.
You know, like, there ain't too many, there's not too many people who would affect the world like he did, you know, in life and in passing.
Mm-hmm. And that night the Grammy Awards took place as well, which was just, it was just a sad state because of what happened earlier that day, and they had to make a lot of adjustments. And I want to ask you this. Is it a goal for you to get a Grammy?
I feel indifferent about it because it's one of those things where historically they've never really acknowledged or show respect to rap, hip-hop music like they should have.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that it's still one of those benchmarks, you know what I mean, that says something about your career. So it's like a catch-22. It's like, I was thinking about this earlier today, just about how, like, historically we've known the government not to be on, you know, the side of brown and black people.
Yeah.
But we still have to rely on them for services. So it's like, it's the same thing, you know what I mean? It's like, the Grammys never really been on our side, never really cared about, you know, rap, hip-hop music. But if you win one, it can do wonders for your career.
Yeah. And I agree with your answer because as a purist in hip-hop and looking at all the great content that's come out of hip-hop history and artists, you look at some of the artists that have never won. Nas never won a Grammy. I mean, he's right. had one of the greatest albums of all time with Illmatic, and I've had the conversation with a lot of people that if you're a real hip-hop fan, you know the Grammys don't matter.
And that's the thing. I guess it depends on what you mean by don't matter.
Yeah, in a sense. You can't take them seriously because if you look when Kendrick Lamar was supposed to be... he's nominated for a Grammy for Good Kid, Mad City, and Macklemore ended up taking it home. And we all know who should have won that year, and that should have been Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah. But I will say this. I don't know one person... Well, I can't say that. It's... Like I said, this is one of those things where... You're not looking for it, but you're not running from it. But there may be somebody, you know, who says, you know, I denounce this award. This award, I don't receive it because of what the Grammys stand for. You know, like it's just a weird situation that you find yourself in because it's like you don't need the Grammys to validate your art, like what you've done, like. If this is meaningful art or not, you know what I mean? But if you win one, like I said, like that's when the mainstream media, mainstream audience comes and it can do wonders for your career.
And the Oscars are the same way too.
Yeah, same. It's the same. I would tell the homies, you know, like, I'm not, like, pressed. I'm not looking for a Grammy. But if I win one, we're going to celebrate it.
In my opinion, if I was in control of the Grammys, a lot of these artists wouldn't be winning, in my opinion. I think there's too many great artists out here that aren't getting enough attention.
And, I mean, I agree with the latter part of your statement. But also, I think the issue is... you know, everybody's not in the voting committee. You know, I mean, there's not enough diversity in the voting committee. There's not enough people who actually care and are champion for rap, hip-hop music. You know, like a lot of those people, I can't say a lot of those people, a lot of people only hear music that reaches them, meaning that they don't actually seek music out.
Yeah.
Like, they're not like, yo, what's new? Like, who's some new artists I should check out? You know what I mean? It's like, what finds me? And that's why, like, a lot of times people are like, yo, you know, music is terrible right now. Music is, I don't even entertain that thought because a lot of those people that say that aren't actually seeking out the music.
Mm-hmm. From what I do usually is I look at everything on the top charts and I give it a good listen. I hear what's on the radio. And I love the storytelling. Like, when I listen to a drill record that... let's give an example here. You got Fabio Foreign and Pop Smoke. I need something with message in it. I don't want to hear about the pill popping all the time and the partying. And give me something that paints a picture in my mind. Something like Blended Family, which you did. It paints a vivid picture. I love the storytelling. That's what we need. That's where hip-hop was based off of. Everything that Mobb Deep talked about in their songs, The Tribe Called Quest, everything was a story, and that's why I like what you do. It's a story.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but I think, like, the key to a healthy life that I was balanced in moderation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
So, I agree with that. I think we need balance, but at the same time, I feel like the drill and then what people call mumble rap and all this... It's too top-heavy right now, where the lyricists aren't getting enough recognition because they put their all into this. They put their blood, sweat, and tears into their music, and someone that just sits in a booth and just comes up with something in 5 minutes gets all the plays and recognition in the world. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
But just like I said, he can rap and nobody cares.
Exactly. Yeah, you said that, yeah.
Nobody cares. Who cares? Like, it's... But I don't think it's worth putting that energy into the world. I think it's worth identifying what you like and just champion that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just talk about that. Like, just push that. You know, like, it's not worth... There's always going to be somebody who does less and gets more.
You're right.
Like, it's always going to happen, you know? And a lot of people who even engage or who...
consume hip hop music aren't even people who care.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the conversation, like, okay, this is how I describe hip hop. I've told a few people this. Like, it's like going to a barbershop in the hood, and you got black barbers all lined up. The customers are mainly black just because it's in the inner city. You know, the demo, access, proximity. Like, it's black people in the neighborhood. You cut black people hair.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversations that are being had in that barbershop, the laughter, the music being consumed, the TV shows on the screen, the video games being played, the homie coming through with bootleg, whatever the fuck, that's hip-hop music.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, every now and again, you have, like, people that are non-black, are not of the culture, come into that barbershop, and they sit there, and they watch all this shit going on before they get their haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And then they leave that barbershop, and they go to their respective neighborhoods, and they tell everybody what they heard, what they saw, what they listened to, what they consumed. And those are the people that are consuming hip-hop, like, that are making these songs that you deem that don't have a message or aren't telling a story. Those are the people that's making those records go to number one, number two, number three. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So it's inevitable. Like, you know, like, from time, there's been great artists who made and produced great art who didn't get the recognition until they may have been dead, or they may have never got it at all.
Mm-hmm. I feel as though the game will change eventually to where lyricists and storytellers do get that momentum back and that spotlight. I do, because everything comes back around. I feel as though storytellers will have their time in hip-hop again, and that's something that I advocate for, and that's why I wanted you to call in, because your music, when you listen to it, you feel it. There's a message there. And it's important. That's an important element of hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think the storytelling has died, you know? Like, there's a lot of... I mean, even Drake tells stories, you know?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He just tells stories. J. Cole. Like, some of the top-selling acts in hip-hop are still storytellers, you know? But you want to get more people who aren't than who are. But that's just the nature of it. And you wouldn't appreciate the storytelling if everybody did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think more focus should be put on just the people that you like and the artists that really resonate with you than the people who aren't doing it.
Yeah, you're right. Focus all the attention on that. And that's what I'm doing on my show. I only play people who... our storytelling, they keep it real hip-hop. They keep it real, and they have their own distinct sound, a distinct artistry. Because when I listen to your music, I can't compare you to someone else. Who are some people that you've gotten comparisons to?
Throughout my career, it's been different people. You know, I think now... who knows? Who knows? Like, I mean, my favorite artist is Jay-Z. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you are familiar with Jay-Z and his discography, like, you can definitely put that up. You can pick up that I'm a Jay-Z fan, for sure.
Oh, yeah. You reference him in the album and in your music. Yep.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Jay album?
Reasonable Doubt was my introduction. Like, that was the first album that I, like, listened. Like, somebody said, yo, go listen to this.
It's a great album.
And I went to listen to it. And because I heard his music after that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was a song that I heard was after that. But it was like, nah, you gotta go back and do your research. You know what I'm saying? It was one of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that Reasonable Doubt is his best album?
Nah, I think it just...
I try not to be big. I'm not big on like favorites or like because like there's things that change in my life that allow me to appreciate art in a different way than I did, you know, at one point. And so for me, it's like it's forever changing. You know what I mean? Like it's ongoing and continuous. Like there's moments where, you know, I might go back to like something because it resonates with me. Like for example, like I listen to The Air Presidents.
Yeah.
The Evils.
The Evils. That's a great one.
The middle of Reasonable Doubt. Anytime I lose somebody in my life, I go listen to those songs. And I don't know what it is, but I think like I lost a sister, and like I was in the car listening to Reasonable Doubt, and like those songs just resonated with me. And so ever since, like whenever there's like loss in my life, you know, I go back to those songs.
Yeah, so, that's definitely great.
So for me, it's not like it's better than his other work. It's just more so like I go back to those because it puts me in a space.
You relate to it.
Yeah.
Certain moments in
it
time.
It speaks to me.
Yes. And I want to get into the performance of the finals for the Cavaliers. What was it like performing in front of that huge crowd in that arena during such a big time for them?
Oh, it was dope. It was dope. It was it was amazing because I was able to take a guest with me, and so I took my father, and that was his first NBA game.
Yeah.
So the first time he ever been to an NBA game was the first time his son was performing at the NBA Finals. You know, like that's just a great story to tell.
It is.
Know?
It's one in a million.
Say
it again? It's one in a million. Not everyone gets to say that.
Right. No. Yeah. I mean, let alone they perform at an NBA Finals, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those things where, like, I tell a story, too. Like, growing up, I would hoop. Like, I played basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, you would, you know, envision yourself being on the court, you know, making the game when it's shot, you know, getting drafted in the NBA. But then I quickly learned that, like, yo, I'm not really a hooper. Like, I'm not going to make it to the NBA. And so it's amazing to me that I still made it to an NBA court. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I still made it to an arena. Like, my music has been played in arenas around the world. But I didn't make it through the NBA. I made it another way.
Would you say that was your biggest performance in your career so far?
That's a good question. Numbers wise, no. Like I performed in front of larger crowds.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a different measuring stick. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, you perform in front of crowds. It's still a crowd, but it's the NBA Finals. Like it's. You know, like, I don't know if it's bigger than performing in front of, you know, 100,000 plus people. You know, it's just a different kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, there's more people who say that they performed that in front of a large crowd than say they performed at the NBA Finals. But I don't know if that, the value that holds, you know, it's more of a tally point, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if we keep a score, I could say you haven't done this, you know?
Now, what are some goals for you for arenas or stadiums, wherever you want to perform throughout your career? Where's somewhere that you want to perform?
Honestly, I just appreciate intimate, like, settings, you know what I mean? Like I really want to, you know, really build out my international tour.
Mm-hmm.
I know some things were in the work, but with Corona, it kind of...
No, yeah, it's difficult.
You know, yeah, you can't tour right now, you know, so I just want to, you know, I just appreciate being able, like, to just get on the road and go to a city, go to a country, perform, and people know your music, you know, and your art. Like, that's just, it's just, you know, there's not a lot of people that can say that they've chased the dream and they experienced it. You know, they, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And they'll definitely love you overseas. I've heard from people I've interviewed, some 90s rappers, and they say that they get a great amount of love over there because they love the lyrics and they love artists like that, that story tell. Still, you'll definitely get great reception over there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have a decent international following in response to the music. You know, a lot of this stuff is just really, you know, what is it? It's like in marketing, you know, like people got to see it at least 7 times before they go buy it, you know, like that kind of thing. It's like, it's just being able to be in people's, in front of people. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that's a lot of the problem or the hardship when it comes to artists. It's yeah. not like they're not talented enough. It's just getting the eyes and the ears.
I also want to see you perform at Madison Square Garden. It's local to me, and maybe you can inspire my Knicks to win some games here.
I don't think they're going to win until they get rid of Dolan.
Oh, I agree. He's making things rough for Spike Lee, made things rough for Charles Oakley. Yeah, they won't be good until he leaves.
Yeah, they might be a little cursed.
Yeah, I think they are. So for so far, I want to let the listeners know now, you can get Jero's new album, Keep Everything Yourself, on all platforms if you want to listen to real hip-hop and storytelling and real artistry, in my opinion. It's available on all platforms.
Yes, yes.
From what you've heard back from reception of listeners and even charts, if you want to get into that, what are the tracks that are doing the best and getting the most listens?
I couldn't tell you just because I haven't really ran the numbers or looked at the numbers. Mm-hmm. A lot of it mainly because when I dropped the album, it was a weird time. You know what I'm saying? Like we had just lost Kobe. I didn't want it to make it like self-indulgent. But a lot of the concepts and the subject matters I was talking about were relevant to the conversations I was having and my friends were having and my peers were having with other people. So it's like, yo, this could be a healing moment. So I think that, like, dropping it in the midst of that was a murky time. And then the next month, we have the coronavirus. So yeah. It's like, I just haven't really been, you know, following anything. You know what I'm saying? It's more so like, I know the music speaks to people because, you know, they tell me in my DMs, they tell me in my comments. You know, they text me, you know what I mean? They email me. They find a way, they tell me on Twitter, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I know it's just a lot of songs affect people in different ways, you know what I'm saying? And for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think your music speaks to a lot of people and it could inspire a lot of people. Especially, in my opinion, I think you're the best artist to come out of Ohio in recent years. But I'm not too familiar with the rest of the artists in that area, especially hip-hop in Ohio overall, as I'm in New York, so I'm paying attention to what's going on here more. But what other rappers are in Ohio that we can look forward to hearing soon, if not already?
I mean, I'm sure you know Trippie Redd.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, Trippie Redd is out there. I mean, it's just a few... It's a few artists. I think the difference is that it's just Ohio isn't an entertainment capital, you know. So it's like a lot of the artists coming out of there has to just do a lot more work than most major metro cities. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're coming out of New York, Miami, Chicago, Houston, LA, you know, Philly. You know, Atlanta, you just have a bigger platform to build on because the population is larger, you know? So, it's like, it's just one of those things where, You know, you might every once in a while see an artist from Ohio, from the Midwest, or you might not.
Yeah. And with this whole coronavirus thing going around, I know there's other artists doing it. Would you do a virtual concert?
I just did one today.
Okay, that was a concert. I wasn't able to tune in. I was setting up for the show and everything. And so you did do a performance today.
Yeah. So my album, Never How You Plan, turned 4 today. And so I did a...
Oh, congrats on that.
No, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I love Champagne off that one. Champagne's a favorite of mine.
Oh, hell yeah. I did a Q&A, a sort of a Q&A. Then I did a performance, and then we just jumped into some old sounds from a previous group, but we also touched on some songs from my new album. Mm-hmm.
And Jarrell, I want to ask you, is there anything else you want to get out on the show here tonight? Anything you have upcoming? Maybe another performance on Instagram Live, a Q&A, anything? Now's your time.
You know, right now it's unprecedented times. If something comes, everything I got planned got canceled. So right now it's just more of a regrouping and rebuilding thing. I'm working on, you know, some new music, of course. I got a visual coming out for Drees for the new album.
Okay, yeah.
In the perfect world, it would have been out, but due to the, you know, what's going on in the world, it's kind of got, you know, pushed back. So in the coming weeks, that visual will be out, for sure. And so, you know, just, you know, let everybody know that Keep Everything Yourself is available on all platforms.
Yeah.
Listen to it, stream it, buy it.
This is real rap. You know? This is real rap, as I tell my listeners. This isn't microwave rap. This is real rap.
Hell yeah.
All right, Jarrell, I want to thank you for calling in tonight. I had a great time, and you're always welcome to come into St. John's University if you're in the area, to call in again in the future. Man, I had a great time, and I'll always support your music.
Appreciate it. Thank you, man.
And take care and stay safe, all right?
You too. Thank you.
Yeah, and have a good night.
You too.
Take care. Big thank you to everyone who tuned in tonight to the show. Shout out to Jarrell. You can follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Jarrell, Jerreau. Make sure to go get his new album, Keep Everything Yourself. Available on all platforms. Real storytelling, real hip hop, you know what it is. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at The Real Max, TheRealMax. Stay tuned. Good night, everyone. Thank you to everyone listening in. Stay safe. And keep it locked to my Instagram and much more. Stay tuned.